Hey everyone, quick show note before we get started. Chris and I are going to start off the podcast talking a full slate of Wednesday baseball, early and evening slate. And then near the end, around the 25-minute mark, we'll get into some PGA talk with the Deutsch Championship. All right, let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Wednesday, August 31st. I had to look up the date there real quick. My name is Doug Norrie. That is Chris Durrell on the other line. Chris, how's it going, brother?
Well, it's a pretty sad day here as a Minnesota Vikings fan, but I'm ready to talk some baseball to get over it.
You know, we'll get into the Vikings thing one second. Let me just do our quick salesy thing at the beginning. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you build Major League Baseball lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Head over to the site, DFSR.com/lab, L-A-B, and that gives you a free trial through the first week of NFL, even with the Teddy Bridgewater-less Vikings, but it will take you through that first Sunday. So you can use our projections in our brand new player lab, powered by Lineup Lab. That's really going to help you filter and query for everything you would need to do to get started for MLB and NFL lineups for DraftKings and FanDuel. And it's free for the next 10 or so days, and then $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, I know this is an MLB podcast, but real quick, when you hear things like horrific and gruesome when it comes to an injury, I mean, what did it do to your stomach?
Especially when it comes to my favorite team's quarterback, I pretty much fell to the floor yesterday.
Yeah.
Tried to search as much as I possibly could to find out what was going on. Took some time, thought about it. You know, looking at last year, Teddy wasn't, I guess, they really held him back. So they were a run-first defense kind of team. So, I mean, if they can get back to that, I guess they can be all right with a replacement-level quarterback. He just showed so many signs of progressing this year. So it's really sad.
And we'll get into this. James and I are going to do an NFL podcast tomorrow, so we'll talk a little bit more about it. But Chris is one of the few Vikings fans that I know, so I wanted to get his take really fast. Let's get into the double slate of baseball that we have going today. We have an early slate of, I think, six games starting at 1 o'clock, which I find pretty interesting. The one note I'm going to say is I'm not exactly sure who is pitching in Colorado. I'm seeing different information from different sites. Some people have Jeff Hoffman pitching the early game, and others have Tyler Anderson pitching the early game. So I guess we'll get into that in a second when we get to the Colorado and Dodger bats. Like I said, I'm seeing different sources have different information there. I'm hoping that, you know, irons itself out in the next hour or so. Chris, start me off with pitching. Where a couple interesting pitchers going today? If you're kind of maybe starting to structure things from a cash game perspective, where are we looking to start with pitcher today?
I like looking at that first game, the White Sox and Tigers. It's going to be the lowest projected total of the day. You know, you got Sale on the mound versus Verlander. When it comes down to two ace pitchers like that, I always kind of lean towards the home team, and they just happen to be favorites. I think they're -135 favorites today as well. And then you just add in the point that Verlander's been, since the start of July, he's been 7-1 with a K rate almost up to 10. His xFIP stayed below 4, which is nice for a fly ball pitcher. And, you know, it's been a really good season for him. And he hasn't allowed, I think, 3 or more earned runs in the second half of the season. So I think just for safety, I think Verlander's right there. And then, you know, kind of looking everywhere else with the six games, you can kind of go off the board a little bit with the rest. Felix Hernandez is there. It's a little bit scary in a 9-over-under game. But he's been pitching pretty well as of late. And then, like you said, with you're probably going to want to avoid the pitching in the Dodger and Colorado. Of course, we don't even know who's pitching yet completely. But Matt Moore, I think in the Arizona-San Francisco game in a nice park, makes a nice option as well.
You know, I was talking about Moore this morning, and we have a chat room up on the site. People are already in there, live chatting baseball, talking thoughts and questions, blah, blah, blah. And I was in there talking to some people last night, and I was Moore was a guy who our system was pretty high on early. But one thing that really concerns me, I don't know, what are your thoughts? He threw 133 pitches last game. He was in like a no-hit bid for up until the 8th or 9th, and I think he got pulled somewhere in the 9th, maybe. But he threw 133 pitches, which is about 25% more than his biggest game of the whole season. Way, way more than his average pitch count. So, I mean, we're probably talking like 30% more than his average pitch count. Is that something you'd consider as a warning sign? I tried to do some studies on this morning, but I just couldn't find anything definitive. What are your thoughts when you see a pitch count like that?
Yeah, I guess there's no real, I don't really have statistical data to back it up, but I would definitely, you know, looking at his game logs before, like, he's gone 5 innings, 6 innings, 7 at the most, and then all of a sudden you got that 8 2/3 where you pitched 130 plus pitches trying to get that no hitter, right, which was unfortunately broke up. I could see him, you know, in that 80 to 90 range tonight. It might go up a little bit higher if he has another, you know, excellent outing. They want to continue letting him out to go back out there, but I really can't see him going too deep, especially against Arizona.
Yeah, I just think they'd be like just totally crazy to throw him a ton of pitches again. I mean, say what you want about how pitch counts are managed for pitchers now. I know this is there's arguments about whether or not, you know, teams do this correctly with their pitchers. Some people will go the old school route of, oh, they baby them too much, which I can in some ways hear that. But also just teams are really, really regulated when it comes to this. And this is just such an outlier number. And like I said, I looked up some of the numbers this morning. I just couldn't find any study. I know there has to have been a study about this. I just couldn't find it in the limited time before the podcast. But I would, if the Giants have any clue, they would just say, you know what, we need to cap this at like 100, no matter what he's doing, and just move away. I actually downgraded his innings pitch just a little bit with that idea. I'm not sure if it's totally correct, but it just felt correct.
Yeah, and it's they're in a playoff race too. So, like you said, it would be a smart thing to do. They seem like the smart kind of team that's gonna possibly hold him back versus just letting him roll out there if he's doing good again tonight.
And you mentioned it before with Verlander. I think Verlander ends up becoming pretty much the chalk pitcher, at least on FanDuel, probably on DraftKings as well. The price actually just seems incorrect to me. Less than 10,000 on FanDuel, only less than 11K on DraftKings with some other cheaper pitchers in there. I think I'm totally with you. I don't think you spend up for sale in this place. He's an underdog with a higher run line going against them. That Tigers are a good team. Give me your thoughts on another guy that the system likes, and I'm wondering if you're on the same page as Michael Fiers. Is it Fiers, Fiers? Yeah, how do you say it? Is it Fiers or Fiers? I always get this wrong.
I say Fiers.
Okay, fine. We'll just go with that. I'm sure someone will jump in and correct me for like not watching enough Astros games to know. So whatever. Yeah. If I'm wrong.
Uncle's gonna phone you,
or
send a message. On
believe me, dude. When we get things wrong, we hear about it. So I know for a fact that I'll hear within the first half hour of this podcast if I'm saying this wrong, and I'll have it corrected. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I like Michael Fiers today, mostly on FanDuel, where the Astros sit as -210 favorites right now. He hasn't been really a pitcher I've been targeting all year, with an average K rate and home run to fly ball rate sitting in that 15% range, but with the win potential today. The Astros offense behind him facing left-hander Detweiler. I think the win potential's there, and I think he makes a great GPP play on FanDuel.
And I think you end up seeing sort of like on DraftKings at least, it becoming a Verlander and Fiers play, mostly because the prices just really work out, and you're going to be able to roster some of the bigger bats almost no problem. He's only 7,000 there. Big. I think he's the biggest money line on the early slate. So I like him just from sort of that point of view. And I think that those two guys make a pretty nice pairing. When we're looking at the offensive side of things, some of the higher, like I said, I'm still waiting on an early line an early line I can trust on this Dodger-Rockies game, because I'm just not, because like I said, some people have Anderson pitching, but then it has the Rockies at 6.5 implied runs, which doesn't make sense because Anderson was supposed to pitch last night and the Dodgers were like 5.5 or less implied runs. So this is where I'm just not totally positive I'm getting the correct information on that line. So I'm going to kind of, let's just say if it's Anderson, it's a little less enticing for the Dodgers. You know, the Rockies are still in play if it's Stripling going on the early slate, but I think we need to take a wait and see approach. After that game, which again is pitcher dependent, what are some stacks you think you can get on board with for the early slate?
Yeah, first up for the best stack, you know, if you're going to stay away from that Rockies-Dodgers game, and I 100% agree with you that if Anderson's in there, kind of downgrade the Dodgers a little bit, but I don't think that really adjusts the Rockies at all. But yeah, getting back to the next best one would be the Red Sox for me today against Smiley. A left-hander in Boston just isn't going to work out, and the Red Sox sit third in the league right now in WOBA versus lefties, and they've scored more runs. I think they're the only team to score 700 runs so far this year. I just think that powerful offense against Smiley can just do some damage, like Mookie Betts, possibly even David Ortiz. I think he might be one of the lower owned guys of the stack. Pedroia's been red hot lately. Bogarts makes a nice option. And you can even fit, you know, if you're not going to go with Ortiz, you can go with Hanley Ramirez as well at first base.
Yeah, Smiley is an extreme fly ball pitcher in just the exact park you don't want to be for a lefty pitcher, because he has something like a 50% fly ball rate, or maybe even a little higher. That's really, really extreme for a pitcher. It works out fine for him when he's playing in Tampa Bay, because that park will hold in a lot of those fly balls. Fenway and the Green Monster just doesn't operate in the same way. You just need to elevate a ball there to get it out. I think that's one of the big reasons you see such a big line in favor of the Red Sox, is that their home run expectation for him, if they can just basically make contact with the top of the order, they are a pretty heavy favorite to put some balls out today. So yeah. I'm totally with you. The Red Sox seem like I probably could end up, because they're not spending a ton on pitching almost no matter what, I could see even on FanDuel getting 3 to 4 Red Sox, even in cash games, that, again, depending on what happens in that Dodger game.
For sure.
After those two, after the Red Sox, there's another team you maybe can round things out with, besides the Game and Coors, any of these other teams like the Rangers, the Mariners, the Astros, any of those teams you would maybe give a slight nod to going in?
Yeah, I kind of mentioned when we talked about Fires, I like the Astros today. They got 8.5 over under right now. They're also big favorites, so they're getting the majority of that 8.5 at, I think, projected for over 5.1 runs, something like that today. So, you know, you got Springer, then you got Bregman, the rookie there. He had a slow start. I think he only had 2 or 3 hits in his first 42 at bats, but he's been red hot lately. Moved up to second in the lineup, hitting in front of Altuve and Correa. And then you got Gattis there, also makes a nice spot back in the 5 spot against lefties. He always destroys lefties. And then kind of on the low end, I think I might consider the Mariners. It's they rank in the bottom third against left-handed pitching, but the over-under is 9 with they got a projected run total of around 4.6, 4.7 today. So I think I maybe not so much of a stacking option, but I really like Nelson Cruz as a core outfielder today.
Yeah, the system was a little lower on Cruz than I thought it would be, just overall, considering the game and the lefty piece of it, because he's like a true elite talent when it comes to that split. So I need to look into that a little bit, because it wasn't as high as I thought it would be on him. Yeah, I think this overall, just to kind of sum this up, I find this early slate to be really, really interesting. I like when the pitching is sort of crystallized pretty early, and then I like when the bats are also sort of trending to one or two teams that seem like they have the higher expectations. This is a early slate that I can definitely get behind. And like I said, we're still waiting on a little piece of information on the Rockies and Dodgers, and just to make sure be 100% sure who's pitching there. Before we get into the evening slate of games, I wanted to just take a quick mention of what happened yesterday with the weather in Colorado. Did you see, were you kind of aware of what was going on here on the slate last night?
Yeah, it looked pretty safe across some sites, but it ended up getting canceled in the end.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where, you know, a couple, I would call them reputable industry sources for weather that I follow, and a lot of other people do too. And these guys are really, really accurate. You know, guys like Kevin Roth and Mark Paquette, who do a great, great job. And I'm saying this even from a point of view where, like, they don't even work for our site, and I'm still willing to tout them because they're just really, really good at their job. And, you know, the problem with doing a job like that, though, is weather is not a binary A or B, 1 or 0 thing, right? It exists across spectrums of, you know, percentage chance of happening. And sometimes you get a 90% to 10% chance of something playing to not playing, and you spike that 10%, and all of a sudden you're looking at a bunch of just dead lineups because Colorado doesn't play, and people are really, really upset. My caution here, and I'm going to do my 1 minute filibuster on weather. My caution to people about situations like this would be, do not use what happened in Colorado last night to inform future weather decisions when the information is the same. And by this, I mean, you know, I can see if there's a chance of rain somewhere tonight, someone coming into chat or just, you know, thinking to themselves, ugh, I'm not getting burned again on weather. I'm avoiding that situation. And that you just simply cannot do that, right? You need to sort of you need to learn the lesson of there is some risk involved with baseball weather, yes. Most times, if reputable meteorology sources say that something is safe to play, or they're giving it sort of a green light, it's safe to play. And you can, and you know, if we were to look at these guys' track record over the course of the season, they're incredibly accurate when it comes to this stuff. So, just like any projection system, our baseball projections included, right? When things like this are involved, you need to sort of weigh the percentage chance of something happening and use it accordingly. But don't just say, "Oh, Colorado got rained out last night." Therefore, I'm going to avoid all instances of possible rain in the future because I don't want to get burned again. I just don't think that's correct. And I'm off the soapbox. Chris, talk to me about this evening slate of pitching. I took a look at the front page of the site this morning, saw a nice picture of Corey Kluber gracing the front cover of the picks. Is it a start and stop with you with Kluber?
I do think it starts and stops with Kluber tonight. Even with the Twins, they sit in the middle of the pack against right-handed pitching, and they did give some trouble to the Indians pitching. I think that was about 2 weeks ago now. But coming into today, there's minus 300 favorites at home, and the Twins have lost 12 straight games. And then you get Kluber with a 9.5 K per nine rate, and the Twins are striking out close to 22% of the time. Well, Kluber's also given up less than 27% hard contact rate. So he's going to be chalky tonight, but I don't think he can really go anywhere else for cash games. You're going to want to find a cheap pitcher to pair with him on DraftKings. And my question for you is, do you side with Jason Hammel or say, David Phelps? On the late slate.
I totally agree with you on Kluber. He's a minus 300 favorite, and we had talked a little bit about the air, about the how often that money line comes in that high. It's just not, it just really doesn't. You rarely get a minus 300 guy unless you get, a total ace in a situation where the opposing team has really not much in the way of upside in terms of their bats, and they're also just throwing a loser pitcher against him. But, the Twins are one of those teams where, they ran hot for a little bit early in the month, specifically against Indians pitching, and, Kepler had a 3-home run game, and they just kind of strung some games, nice games together. But this team is who we kind of thought they were. They're just not a prolific offensive team. Kluber is a clear cash game play. You mentioned, who are the two guys you asked, Phelps and Hamill?
Phelps and Hamill, yeah.
It's funny about Phelps, right? So last game he comes out, he was pretty chalky play, was against San Diego, especially on FanDuel, probably on both sides. He was really, really a low-priced guy coming in with some nice peripherals, really supporting him, and his pitch count had ticked up. Did you play, real quick, did you play him in this game, in this matchup?
I have not.
Okay, so if you're not aware what happened with him, he cruises through the first three innings. I think he had six strikeouts in the first three innings. He was just totally dominant. Comes out in the fourth and just has an epic disaster of an inning where it was walk, single, walk, loads the bases, is actually getting close to getting out of it. And he's a strike away sort of to get Luis Sardinas out. And Luis Sardinas, who's about the worst hitter in all of baseball, does a base clearing double on him. Then the next play, Zach Cozart reaches on an error, and that's the end of Phelps. And so the thing that concerns me with him is the same reasoning that I think he's actually a good tournament play today. The concern is they pulled him after so few pitches, even though, pitchers have bad innings. It happens to them, the fact that they just weren't willing to have him see it through is a little bit worrisome to me. So that kind of makes me worried. The flip side of it is he was so chalky of a play last game that is fresh in people's minds about what kind of a disaster he had, and that will keep people away from him. So I guess, does that make sense what I'm saying? The thing that worries me about him is the thing that I also think gives him upside in a GBP.
Yeah, I don't think he's safe for cash games. 100% on board with you there. I do think he's got that upside with 11.5 K per nine rate, and especially with that recency bias coming off, being so chalky last time, screwing so many people over in that very short outing last time. But again, like you said, 6 strikeouts in 3 innings, plus he only allowed 2 hits. So his defense really let him down. So I think this is a great spot to jump on for GPP.
Yeah, the peripherals are awesome. The Mets are clearly a better team than the Padres, so it's not like an apples-to-apples comparison with the matchup. But, Vegas still has the Mets coming in under 4 implied runs, and that's still pretty low, all things considered. So I think you can take he probably has the most strikeout upside of any guy in his tier. And the other guy that we actually probably have some concerns on, you mentioned, is Hamill. Walk me through, if I'm a game log watcher, which I think in some ways looking at game logs for pitching is instructive to just know if I'm getting what version of a guy I might be getting. I look at Hamill's last two games, and I see 3 innings, and then I see 3 and a third innings, and then 2 and a third innings. Talk me either, when you look at a game log like that, what are your thoughts? Do you need to do a deeper dive? Does it just stay away from you? Because those two game logs are pretty grisly.
Early in my DFS days, that probably would have scared me, and it would just be an instant fade just from looking at those game logs, just to say, he's trending downwards right now. But the DFS I guess more of the GPP side in me right now kind of looks at that and says, well, this is an opportunity, kind of like Phelps, to take that recency bias, look back a little bit farther in the game log before those two starts, and he allowed two earned runs or less in seven straight starts, winning six straight games. So his peripherals are there. I mean, he's not going to be a high K upside guy, only about 7.5, with an xFIP right around that four, just a touch over four. But I really like the Cubs today, and I think his win potential's there. Mostly, I would use him mostly on FanDuel just because that win potential and low K rate. I look for more of a higher K rate for my pitchers on DraftKings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense to me. His price on DraftKings is only 6,800, and I think that there's going to be, you know, there's a strong case to play him there where you, I don't know, he's just on such a good team. That we're waiting on a money line there. Cubs are always late with the money lines. So I think, you know, we play a little bit of wait and see. Though it would take some extreme money line movement away from the Cubs to, I'm basically at neutral right now, for it to get away from his 6,800 price. So I think on DraftKings, actually, I'm probably even fine just rostering him as a starting pitcher too in cash with Kluber, just because of how much savings you get. And I think you're going to want that savings, especially to roster some of these higher upside bats. Where are you looking in terms of maybe some stacks for the evening slate? In terms, maybe even specific hitters, or maybe there's just a couple teams that are just jumping out to you.
The first team that jumps out is the Blue Jays at the Orioles. Seems like whenever these two teams get together, it's just a home run fest. The Blue Jays, I think they're projected for about 5.2 runs today against Gallardo. He has not been that great at all. Mm-hmm. And just the Jays are really starting to heat up. Looking at the last 14 days, they got the second best WOBA at 357 with a 123 WRC plus overall. And looking at right-handed pitching, they're sitting in the top 10 there as well. So, they're looking at the bat. I mean, if Batista's still leading off again, I really like his spot there. Donaldson and Encarnacion has some reverse splits. Russell Martin's been pretty hot over the last month. He's starting to cool off a bit. And then they're just filled up through the lineup. I think Michael Saunders makes an excellent play. I think he's got two doubles and two home runs in his last five games, I think. So he's starting to heat up again, too. So just from top to bottom in that lineup, they're just red hot right now. What are your thoughts on the Jays? Are you on board with them?
Yeah, I love the Jays. I still like the Nationals are a good team against they can hit lefty pitching pretty well with some guys at the top of their order like Turner and Worth. Even Harper doesn't totally scare me away in the lefty-lefty matchup. He's been just about as good as a baseball player can be over the last 2 weeks or so. He's been a scoring machine. I think he scored fantasy points in – I can't even find the last – August 6th is the last time Harper did not score a point in a game. that's a crazy, crazy run for a guy like him. He's turning around some of that bad luck that was happening for him early in the season. The only thing worries me with the Nationals is, you do get those two lefty bats in him and Murphy in the middle of the order, which does downgrade them just a little because they're better against righties. No, I think you're going to sort of stop. It's going to start with me, like you said, with the Blue Jays, a couple of Nationals in there. And then I can see getting back on the Indians here again. Pat Dean is just bad. Your thoughts against the Indians against Dean?
Yeah, he's got a 6.24 ERA, and I mean that we don't really look at ERA as much. We kind of go back and look at the xFIP, and it's not that great either. It's 4.5, so he's got a below average K per nine rate with a really high walk rate, walking almost three batters per nine. So yeah, I think he makes a great pitcher to target today.
Yeah, Rajay Davis should be a top of the order again. He was awesome last night against the lefty. See no reason he wouldn't be back in the mix again today. And a couple other bats like Francisco Lindor's price has come down a little bit. Napoli looks pretty good. I think there's a lot of different options you're going to be able to get on this evening slate of games, especially because you're not paying too much up for Kluber. And after that, you know, if you're really not paying much, you're not paying out of bounds prices for Kluber to begin with, and then the starting pitcher two situation is you're probably going to end up getting a cheap guy in. You're going to be able to roster a lot of these high upside, you know, best talent bats like Bautista, like Donaldson, like Mike Trout, who's still coming, you know, relatively cheap all things considered. So I really, really like the way this whole entire day is shaking out in terms of nice top tier pitching that we can feel pretty good about, plus a bunch of just upside bats that are going to hit top of the order. This is a day that I'll spend pretty much the whole day making lineups just because I love the way it's kind of shaking down.
My one last question for you on the evening slate for stacks. I'm looking at the Cardinals are projected for, I think, almost 5 runs, and they're minus 150 favorites going in and facing Matt Garza in Milwaukee today. What's your thoughts on them? I really like looking at Matt Carpenter, Jerko, the top of that order. Moss right now, he's been red hot in August as well. So I don't think they're going to be too high owned, but and because of that, I think they make a great GPP play, and they got a really high run total, so the upside is definitely there.
Yeah, I'm in lockstep with you pretty much 100% across of everything you said there. The Cardinals are always a team that I just kind of wait to see what their lineup is, because yeah, they're usually the team that we can find some value in, because they'll shuffle some guys like Wong or Garcia or Jerko to the top of the order where their price hasn't caught up with that kind of opportunity yet. So they're a team that I mean, Carpenter's always a guy that's in play. They're a huge park upgrade for them moving into Milwaukee, like you said. But they're a team that I expect probably ends up having a Cardinal or two, simply because they are just the value guys, right? Like they shift that lineup around so much that prices can never stabilize on them. So if you can get a couple of those cheaper guys, like I mentioned at the top of the order, all of a sudden you're looking at fantasy, like I said, especially guys like Wong or Garcia. Yeah. If you can just get them to the top of the order, then you're just, it can run a value train all day. Yeah, this is just the day. I can't really say how excited I am. I love these kind of days. I love when things are crystallized sort of this early, and then we're just waiting on a couple of things to fill in around the margins.
Just for some value, yeah.
Exactly. All right, let's close the pod off today talking a little bit of PGA. Like I said at the very beginning, Chris is also our resident PGA expert. Been doing just a phenomenal job all season long, breaking down just every different tournament from the bigger ones, you know, the majors, all the way down to your smallest little tournaments, which we probably have an example of this weekend with the Deutsche Championship. Chris, walk me through what you're taking a look at starting, you know, things tee off tomorrow morning, Thursday morning. What are some of the things you're looking for from this tournament in particular, from some guys that jumped to the top of the field for you? And obviously, I say this as a little caveat. I really am not, don't know much about PGA, so I always take this from like the noob perspective. So walk me through what are some of the things you're looking for on this slate, or excuse me, for this weekend's golf tournament.
For sure. I'll correct you right off the bat. This, with Labor Day, this is the one golf tournament of the year that they actually start on Friday and run through Monday.
I already blew it.
It's kind of, yeah, it's Labor Day tradition. So the Deutsche Bank Championship has always been played at TBC Boston since the inception of the FedEx Cup playoffs in 2003. It's a par 71, 7,216 yards. It's originally designed by Arnold Palmer and opened in 2002. So it was kind of designed for the FedEx Cup playoffs, you could say, a little bit. It was remodeled in 2007 by Gil Hans. He's the designer that did the Olympic course, and with help of former player Brad Faxon, they regraded all the fairways. They added chocolate drop mounds, which are just another variation of some bunkers, and kind of like mound stuff, a little bit more natural to the area, I guess you could say. And this will be the second week of the PGA Tour playoffs, so we're down to 100 players. There's actually only going to be 99 this week, as Danny Willett is skipping the FedEx Cup playoffs, playing on the European Tour. The BMW Championship's next week. So this week, it'll be the last cut event, so the top 70 in ties will make it to the weekend. And then after the tournament's over, the top 70 will move on to the BMW Championship next week. And then following that will be the final 30 2 weeks later for the Tour Championship. So we're getting down to the end of the season here. And like I said, the course this week is TPC Boston. Some of the things I'm looking at, I'm really concentrated on the strokes gain metrics. Number one for me this week is going to be approach, very important, along with off the tee. So distance, I don't think is going to be a huge thing this week. It's going to be more about placing your tee shots in strategic places to either one, avoid the bunkers, and two, get a really good approach shot to the green. Putting is always going to be important, especially for GPPs, because the guys that putt good during the week are the guys that are going to be in the top 10 and contending for the win. So two guys that I'm really looking at this week is going to be Jason Day at the top. I was on Dustin Johnson last week, and I kind of think these two are battling it out for the player of the year right now. It's going to come down to it. Jason Day, he only hit about 35% of his fairways last week and still managed to get a T4 shooting a minus 7. So, I mean, if he was able to hit even a few more fairways, who knows what he can do. He could get right back up to that dominance. So he's got good course history here. He's made five straight cuts. And, I mean, that's not the biggest thing, as there's only 100 players in the field. but four of those have been top 15s and two of them have been top 10. So he's definitely my favorite guy on the board. And then a value guy that I'm looking at this week, digging way down the board, and it's kind of a little bit of a narrative street, I guess, would be Russell Knox at 7,500. He's won twice this year, so he's got his first two wins on tour this year, one coming two tournaments ago, and he just got snubbed for the Ryder Cup team, and I think he's going to come out this week and have something to prove after getting snubbed there. So he's very accurate, sixth in greens in regulation, 13th in proximity, and he's really good at avoiding bogeys. He's ninth in bogey avoidance there. So he doesn't make a ton of birdies or really destroy the par fives by any means. But I think at 7,500, he creates a good value, and he's going to be out there, like I said, looking to prove something this week.
Yeah. So if you want to see Chris's full breakdown of these guys, you know, he gave us Day and Knox on the pod here, along with some of his thoughts on, you know, what to look for in terms of the course. But if you really want a full breakdown of getting inside of his head and the stats that he's using, you get head over to the site. We have a free copy, or we just have the free picks up that just kind of allow you to break down on some of the different golfers in the course. And then a deeper dive, he also has more specific targets that you can use to put together lineups for DraftKings and for Fantasy Feud. Those are $4.99. Those are the purchase form for those are within the article, and you're all set to really take on the Deutsche Bank thing, which starts Friday, and which is the first correction of many that I had for this podcast today, knowing that I just know nothing about PGA. Chris, any final thoughts on the PGA or MLB before we get out of here today?
Just ready to start building lineups.
Yeah, this is gonna be a good day, man. I can already feel it. Baseball, really liking the way it's shaking out. Nice little tournament going up, starting for your Labor Day weekend barbecue, so you can sweat something out on Monday. All right, man, we did it. We had a couple starts and stops, some technical things, but we're professionals. We got through it. I'm kind of proud of what we did here.
We did good. Yeah, we made it through. We struggled a little bit, but it just makes us stronger.
Only about 17 or 18 curse words between the two of us bleeped out.
What my one mention, yeah. My one mention was going to be today that I read on Twitter right before we got on this podcast.
Go.
Was a little ESPN thing. Having trouble finding it now, but it was the Tim Tebow. After 53 plate appearances in his little workout there yesterday, something like 75% contact rate, and they were comparing him to a bunch of major league hitters. I just thought that was just a little crazy.
I'm not excited for a Tim Tebow era in the MLB. It's not something that I'm hoping that it kind of that sort of dies on the vine. All right, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com. If you like typing in less letters into that web browser, you go over there, you do /lab, L-A-B, and that's going to get you a free 10-day trial to our projection system for NFL and MLB, all wrapped up under one umbrella. Also give you access to our brand new state-of-the-art player lab for NFL, which we're already getting rave reviews on and really excited to use throughout the course of the NFL season. It's free for the next 10 days, $29.95 a month after that. I will be back on the podcast tomorrow talking MLB, also NFL. Chris, man, have a good day. Thanks for jumping on. Good luck with MLB today.
Cheers, everyone.
All right.